Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing? It's a way back Wednesday on The Usual Suspects, and as like we normally do, we drop the ball, we kick it, we watch it roll, we don't have a topic, and then at about 10 o'clock this morning, we decide, what are we going to do, fellas? We debated, and then we went the Nick route. I thought we were doing songs about disappointment for the punishment of the Astros.
We did.
We did.
Did you not?
I submitted it.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Well, you guys couldn't make up your mind, so no. I kidding, because I kiddingly said I was
pulling your leg
when I said I had a
This is why I don't want to come up with ideas for Way Back Wednesday, because I had a simple idea.
I did year 2000.
And then you two had to complicate it and make it so much more difficult than it needed to be.
So dysfunctional.
I did the year 2000.
We are so Nick and I both did songs about disappointment.
I'm done.
We are done. So
never coming up with an idea ever again.
You're dysfunctional is exactly what we are.
Oh, my God.
Unreal.
So we did one list of the year 2000 mine, two on disappointment. So I don't know what the association with the year 2000 is, but guess what?
Because when I saw your list, because the last text was, Nick goes, we're going to do 2000.
Yeah.
And then you were like, I thought we were doing disappointment. I was like, oh, yeah, we can do that. And now, right, Nick? I said, oh, yeah, let's just do that. That's cool or whatever.
You said that works, too. The problem with us is that we have a hard time confirming.
Right. So I was like, well, I guess we're doing that. So when I saw your list, I was like, this is the worst list about disappointment I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because none of this makes sense.
Because it's not about disappointment.
Yeah, it's My Life by Bon Jovi. I mean, I know your life is a disappointment, Joel. But I didn't understand specifically about that song.
Got married at 60, had kids at 66. I mean, what the hell's wrong with me?
But no wonder your list sucks so bad for the topic. Now I get it. Okay.
So today is going to be Way Back Wednesday, songs in a hodgepodge of either about disappointment or the year 2000. You know, you've all probably had some disappointment back in 2000. We'll just figure it out and maybe you guys can text us what your disappointment was. We'll act like we care, and then we'll have an excuse for why we did what we did.
I'm looking at Nick's list. Perfect list about disappointment.
How in the world are you
I literally have a song called Disappointed. Your list? Garbage.
The only reason why my list is better than his is because he did the wrong category.
Is Bill Murray in the building? Because it's like Groundhog Day. Now suddenly, I just heard Barry say, Nick's list is the best list. I'm going, what the hell's going on
it's
here?
Crazy day.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness. Off the rails already.
We're here. You're here. We take it till 4. You guys being the loyalist of loyal usual suspects, we appreciate you. On a Way Back Wednesday, it doesn't matter. You guys know how we do it. But we're going to have some fun today. Also, news breaking that the other shoe has dropped on Alex Cora.
Oof.
Holy moly. The Red Sox got out. I think Jim Crane set a precedent of this is how we do it. And you can play that Montel Jordan, by the way, Nick. And in the process of doing that, before the league got involved with their final decision, the Red Sox said, you know what? We're doing what he did. He gone.
Well, that's the thing. And we talked about that when Jim Crane made the decision on Monday. We talked about the fact that he's kind of setting a precedent. He's almost like backing the Red Sox and any other team that gets busted into a corner and saying, this is the new bar.
Standard,
right? Like the baseball has set the bar for what the punishment is going to be. But as an owner, he took it to the next level. So you almost look bad if you're the Red Sox if you don't step in and make this same decision.
Definitely. And I read the 9-page report that the commissioner put out on the actual big report because I was interested in it.
That's weird.
And we had talked about it on the show, but the more I read, the more it became abundantly clear. Alex Cora is the catalyst to all of this, and along with the players.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting things in there that kind of revert back from the commissioner's mouth to stating why he wasn't going to punish the players, but that starting with Luno, going to A.J. Hinch, because all these people are under them, and that whether they didn't know it initially or not, that they knew enough, but it kept going back to Alex Cora was the guy that continued to push it to the point where the video room was moved, to push it to the point where the monitors were used. And we were right in saying the fact that A.J. Hinch was opposed to it, but he admittedly said himself, but I didn't do anything to stop it. That's right. On me.
Yep.
But he did, on two occasions, grab the monitors, break them.
Which is a weird, I keep hearing this, right? Like, he busted up the monitors, he broke the monitors. That's just a weird sequence of events in my mind, because I'm trying to figure out how that happens. Does he go in and say, hey, you guys stop doing that? You know how your parents are like, hey, don't be in your room with the door closed. And then they walk by and they're like, hey, I told you to leave the door open. Hey, and then they just take the door off the hinges. Was it one of those things where he's like, get rid of these monitors? And then he comes back the next day and the monitors, I thought I said get rid of these monitors. So then he freaks out and busts them up. Why not just like have them removed? Why would you have to bust up the equipment?
Thought about
that's
it too.
Just a weird thing for me.
Here's where I'm at with that, right?
Okay.
As the manager of the team, because they said players were down there in the tunnel in front of the monitors and by the video room, and they were all involved in it, and they were constantly about it. You could see him going, I need a pinch hitter. Where is insert player's name here?
Gotcha.
You can't find him. And he's down the stairs. He's in the video room. He's watching the monitors. Or somewhere, something else happens where that becomes
They're
a distraction.
Focused on that and not the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he can start saying, that's getting in the way of me running the team the way I want to run it. And that becomes a problem.
That makes sense.
So you and I talked about it yesterday. I thought he doesn't get a lifetime ban, but if those guys got a year, he's getting at least two.
Yeah, he's probably one for each year.
Yeah.
Right? At minimum.
For two titles in a
row. If you cheated in 2017 on one team and then you cheated in 2018, and the precedence has been set that it's a one-year suspension for said cheating, you probably get 2 years. But doing it multiple times, I feel like now you're saying there's a pattern. And that could be that could be cause for maybe an extended suspension, like a five-year suspension. But a lifetime ban, I don't think, is off the table.
Now, here's the other interesting thing.
I really don't.
That when I was looking at all the different people that were named for punishment, Brandon Taubman's name is in this.
Oh, is it?
Okay.
Okay.
And one of the things they said was, once the whole thing happened during the celebration in the locker room with him, and then he was subsequently let go, he put him on indefinite suspension then. So now what he's done is he said, because of that and because he roped in the other things, that Taubman is now suspended along with Luno and Hinch for the year, at which point, after the final out of the World Series in 2020, he needs to personally submit his request for
employment,
the suspension to be lifted, at which time he will evaluate it based on what he's done to that point, how he's gone about whatever therapy they figure he has to do.
Interesting.
And the other point to which we were talking about yesterday that he brought up was, the punishment on Luno was based on his entire way that he handled and ran his entire department, with specifics to press releases, the media, arrogance.
If that's true,
and I got the quotes,
I have
for
a
you.
Real problem with that. And this is a twofold issue now that I have, because I was driving in and a buddy of mine, Ro Pimpin on Twitter, had found a tweet with some audio, and I sent it to Nick, and we'll get it. But this goes, I think, this is kind of spiraling out of control almost. And now I feel like if you're suspending a guy for the way he ran his organization and it had nothing to do with actually cheating, I feel like you might be overstepping your bounds as a commissioner. You don't like the way that Jeff Luno handled a press release for Osuna or anything else? Great. But why would that be coupled into using electronic devices to cheat? I think that's overstepping your bounds as a
commissioner.
There's
a lot to get into, because the other thing is he basically states those things weren't supposed to be in the dugout. Once batting practice was over, they weren't supposed to be anywhere near. Then I go back and revert to Aaron Judge and the iPad in the World Series, or in the Championship Series, in the dugout. then why is that in there? Why are you doing that if that's what you wanted? Because it's in here. But I want your take on this, okay?
Okay.
Because we talked about this. So this is the statement directly associated with why Luno was punished and what the commissioner observed. No one can dispute Luno's baseball operations department is an industry leader in analytics. It became clear to me the culture of the baseball operations department manifested itself in a way in which is the way employees were treated, the relationships with other clubs, its relationship with the media and external stakeholders, and it became very problematic. At least in my view, the baseball operations department's insular culture, one that valued and rewarded results over all other considerations, combined with the staff and individuals who often lack direction or oversight, led at least in part to the Taubman incident, the club's admittedly inappropriate and accurate responses to that incident, and finally, to an environment that allowed the conduct described in this report. He took it all to the point of leading up to this.
It sounds like they're being punished for multiple things.
Indeed.
And I have an issue with that. So now the commissioner is going to be policing how front offices for all the major league teams are ran, and if it doesn't run to his satisfaction, then he's going to start suspending people or punishing people. If it would have said, look, we believe Jeff Luno knew about this, even though there's no evidence, there's evidence to the contrary that he didn't. We believe he did, so we're going to suspend him based on that belief. I'm good with that. That's fine. But if you start talking about, we don't like the way he ran his front office, we don't like the way Taubman handled the Osuna thing in the locker room after the playoff win, we don't like the way that they handled the press release when Osuna happened, we don't like this, we don't like that, is an entirely, that should be that should be a Jim Crane decision.
But you bring up a good point, because here's the other thing.
Why is baseball telling the Astros how to run their front office?
Keep in mind,
that makes no sense to me.
You're right about Rob Manfred, because keep in mind the other thing that people have responded to is there's a gag order on every team in this league responding to what just happened with the Astros.
Yeah.
And that means he's squeezing it. He's starting to get his arms around every team going, I will control this narrative. And that's a dangerous, slippery slope, because now you're messing with people's right to First Amendment, the right to speak freely and openly about anything and everything. You got CeCe Sabathia out here saying that they were screwed out of titles because of the Astros and the Red Sox. Look, you got fat and happy, and you weren't the pitcher you once were either, but the Yankees aren't immune from this either. I think it's coming in stages, and I think the Red Sox are next, and then the Yankees might be right after that.
Yep.
And as we mentioned, and you mentioned with Logan Morrison and other comments, the Dodgers aren't free from guilt either.
Nope. Dodgers, White Sox. I was talking to Huggins about this yesterday on the way to the Houston Improv. He said he heard Padres. There's
White Sox.
There's a lot of
mid-level teams.
There's
sucky
a lot of teams.
It's going to be interesting to see. And again, you got to protect the overall value of Major League Baseball and how reputable they are and the purity of the game. So he's trying to do that, but he might be doing it a little bit too strong-armed in the way he's going about his business. But we'll see. Who is hour number one, Nick? I don't know. I don't even know what the hell we're doing.
I think I'm
Who's hour number one?
Barry is hour number one.
Yeah, this is an awesome
So I got to concoct some crappy list on disappointment by the third
that's
hour.
Up to Barry.
Yeah.
It's not up to Barry.
Okay, first of all, whatever list you do will just be disappointing, so we'll just count that.
I agree.
Your list is disappointing matter what.
I got hour number three, and mine's just a disappointing list because they screwed me on the topic.
There you go.
Special shout-out, by the way, to my boy Weston Tamura and Ambar Tequila. If you haven't heard about it, you will. Check it out.
Nice.
Get on the website. Hopefully we're going to be doing some things with them and getting more and more involved, because believe me, it's one thing to know that there's a hot new tequila company. It's another thing when the taste completely outdoes whatever
he asked me, he goes, do you drink tequila? I'm married to a Hispanic chick.
Yeah, tell me about it. That's kind of what we do.
It's like water at our house.
I couldn't introduce Nick that way like you and I.
Yeah.
So I was like, and here's the one guy with the target demographic on his forehead, Mr. I go out on weekends, and he can be your spokesperson.
Exactly.
The most interesting man in Midtown. That's Nick Sciarra.
Nice.
All right, so we're just getting started on the usual suspects. HR&P Listener Line, 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, and of course, always, you can reach us via Twitter, at PacManJoel with a K, at Barry is Funny, at The Producer Nick. We are the usual suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Hello.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Just getting started on a way back Wednesday here in the big city. We already know that the whole list is screwed up. So I'll see what I can do. But in the meantime, Barry's hour number one, songs about disappointment. And because of the new year, it's now not pre-2009, pre-2010.
That's right. We're keeping it a decade. It has to be older than a decade.
Nick did the math on that. He told me that was the way it was going to go. And so that's the way I'm reporting it. So we were talking a little bit about all the continued fallout and follow through from this cheating scandal. We still don't know the actual baseball punishment for Alex Cora. And by the way, people need to get it straight. It's not Joey Cora. That's his brother, who also played in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Everybody goes, someone said on Twitter today, White Sox too. Joey Cora was big on the White Sox for a long time.
Was it Alex that was a Mariner?
Alex was pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
He got around. Obviously, in more ways than one. But interesting, like James Loney, who I believe last year started his major league season with the Sugarland Skeeters and ended up being called up. But he had a tweet and goes, look, Alex Cora is a great dude, one of the best teammates I've ever had. But let's not kid ourselves. Alex Cora was always looking for an advantage and trying to push the envelope, buck the system. And he basically just said, this is kind of what he's always been and always what he's always done. So
interesting.
The Red Sox made their move. Now they're in the market for a manager.
Yeah,
a lot of people throwing a lot of suggestions out there. Most of the suggestions were ones we made and got to you early on.
I there was an article on ESPN, and literally almost every suggestion to replace Cora in Boston comes from within the Boston organization. It's really weird. The only time that they mentioned going outside is to go get Matt Quatraro from the Rays.
Okay.
But otherwise, they've got like Ron Roenick. They've got Carlos Feblis. They've got Tim Hires. They've got Jason Veritek. They even mentioned having Dustin Pedroia be the manager. So it's kind of interesting. It's what we kind of talked about with the Astros, where what are they going to do? Do they just go with Joe Espada, or are they going to go outside the organization and bring in a legitimate, like you suggested, Buck Showalter or somebody like that? But now that's another thing that I think you have to take into consideration is you've got two prominent baseball teams both looking for managers at the same time and need to get it done within a month because pitchers and catchers report in the middle of February. So now whoever the top candidates are, they're probably getting two interviews.
For sure.
Right?
And the thing is, it's not like you've got 6 months or, you know, right, a couple months. Spring training, as we mentioned yesterday, is coming around Valentine's Day for pitchers and catchers to report, which means the time is of the essence. You've got to start making these moves. From the standpoint of the Astros, it's not just about the manager because we know that there's still a void in their rotation. We know that Luno's plan until he was removed was to look at starting pitching first. We know that guys have left in the bullpen that have to be replaced. We know that there are still things that have to be tweaked and done. And if you don't have a guy that's your front man, you know, orchestrating all of this, you're already being kind of set behind the eight ball compared to everybody else. So you've got teams that are kind of scrambling right now and trying to make sure that at least for a 1 year stopgap, they've got to get something in place quickly. So that's why I said from the Astros standpoint, whether you have bigger names that you want to get involved and maybe down the road they're going to be your guy, for this year it just seems like from a common sense perspective because you have so much to worry about from the front office general manager position, Joe Espada's the guy.
I think he's certainly at the top of the list, but I don't know. When you got a team that I think they have the third best odds to win the World Series next year.
Yeah, how about that?
Or second best
Vegas
odds?
Vegas came out yesterday.
They've got the second best odds to win the World Series.
Third best record.
Yeah. Right.
They have them projected at Caesars has them projected at 97 wins next year, falling just shy of the Yankees, who are going to get to the 100 mark again. And the Dodgers would have the best record in baseball. But with that being said, that shows you that roster and with all the turmoil, the bottom line is everything on paper, lineup-wise, pitching-wise, and everything else-wise,
the Astros are still going to be one of the premier teams in baseball, and that's big. But that's also why this is so important. And the one thing that I laugh at, and it's interesting because you mentioned Pedroia, and we know that kind of the new trend in sports is take the unproven ex-player and thrust them into John Lynch as a general manager. Jason Kidd and Derek Fisher were the first two to get coaching jobs in the NBA without ever having to climb the ladder. Now, if you're looking at doing something like that, and Jason Witten was rumored to be a potential candidate for the Cowboys. Now, if baseball starts doing it with a guy like Pedroia, the one I saw all last night on Twitter, Craig Biggio's got to be the new manager of the Houston Astros. Stop it, people.
You think they do that? There's no way.
From a PR standpoint,
it's genius.
Yes, but from it's phenomenal. But from the standpoint of analytics and baseball, the way it's done today.
Well, okay, but let me ask you now. If I think about it, you said from a PR perspective, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it does.
Why?
Because the only reason you go out and add Craig Biggio to this team is because you've lost the fan base locally. And the thing is,
you haven't lost.
The Astros haven't lost the fan base locally. Everybody still supports and loves this team.
Yeah, it's a good
point.
So
I don't think you needed to have a knee-jerk reaction of bringing in a Craig Biggio, or for that matter, my suggestion the last couple of days of Brad Ausmus, if that's why you're doing it, because he was a fan favorite.
By the way, you love Dr. Dre on 290. Someone called out, and I can show you the tweet. Some guy called out and said, some guy on ESPN 97.5 suggested Brad Ausmus, they should be taken off the air, blah, 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 blah,
really?
Blah. And Dr. Dre drilled him and said, you know what, dude, it's the same quote I use all the time. He said, you know what, dude, it's called a discussion for the benefit of sports radio. If you don't know it, go watch wrestling. And I was like, Dre, that's huge. We appreciate that.
Plus, I don't care. It's like Raheel gave me crap for that, for thinking Brad Ausmus would be a good one. Go and look at his record. Go look at AJ Hinch's record before he was the Astros manager. He lost or won 40% of his games. So I'm not going to defend. I'm not going to sit here and try to defend Brad Ausmus. But the thing is, if you had lost the fan base here, but you haven't.
It's a good point. It's now, very good. I'd say from a clubhouse perspective, everyone in that clubhouse respects Bish.
Absolutely.
And they're still talking to him about hitting, and they're asking for advice, they're looking for experiences. So if you want a guy that comes in because AJ was so well-respected, and he also carries a name with him and a Hall of Fame title.
Do you know what I would be worried about, though,
But I think Joel? His spot is a guy that they respect,
they're comfortable
too.
With.
Yeah.
But I would be worried about Biggio being a Larry Bird, Magic Johnson-type manager. Where they were okay, but you know, guys that get to the level that he was at usually don't end up making good managers. It's rare that you see guys that are elite at their sport be really good as coaches or managers.
It's also part of the dedication.
Players,
too.
Yes, players. You know, Mike Matheny, for example, but Mike Matheny was never on the level of
perennial All Star Hall of Famer.
To me, it's a bit different, and that's a concern. I'm not saying he can't do the job.
That's why Doc said we got to get Barry Bonds as the hitting coach. No, I think part of it is it's the dedication that you have to put in to be good at managerial roles. Mike Socha is another one. Wasn't like an All Star. But he was a lifer, and you could see why. Bruce Bochy.
Yep.
So you look at those. And then one thing you go back to the rumor mill, though. They said in a lot of years that Dirk was managing and other guys. It was really Biggio managing behind the scenes
in a lot of
ways.
Oh.
So he is a knowledgeable baseball guy, yes. But do you really want that? You don't want a guy that's going to come in and try and be more of a dictator when what's been going on for the last couple of years has worked.
That's the thing is Biggio he was known to be kind of strict. Like, there was the Astros way. This is how we do it. You don't stray from this. You know, him and Bagwell were on the same page in that regard. He seems kind of old school. Doesn't seem like an analytics guy. He doesn't seem like he would be a new
school.
Now,
he's been with the team for a few years.
You don't get club Astros with a Craig Biggio,
but
right?
Maybe because he's been with the team in the front office for a
few
years.
He's relaxed.
He's learned more about analytics.
Could be.
But you're right on the dictator, because they said if they called the guy up, it was because Big said we needed the guy.
Yeah.
And the first guy he met with when the kid got in the locker room was Big. And then he told them what the do's and the don'ts were.
Run this team?
And
wow.
There was a lot when he was playing.
Yeah.
So you can let us know your thoughts as we continue to roll on. But an interesting sidebar name in Craig Biggio thrown into the mix. Let us know what you think about that. 713-780-3776, HR&P listener line. You can call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitter. Usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
back, usual suspects. ESPN 97.5, half hour in, 3 hour show right here. So appreciate you taking us on the go, wherever you may be in the big city on a Wednesday, way back as it is.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Hey, a couple things from the text line. Somebody said Astros need to lure Bruce Bochy from retirement. That ain't happening. That dude, he had it good. He had it made, and he decided to call it quits. I don't think he's coming back, especially not for a team that's been labeled a cheater and all that.
But you'd be surprised. A lot of people are saying because of the, like we just said with the Vegas odds, because whoever takes the gig or gets the gig knows this isn't going to be a rebuild. There's a chance to win this year.
But I don't know if Bochy would. I don't know.
He just stepped away, so yeah. You're right.
And then somebody said, would Joe Girardi be a good option? He's the Phillies manager, yes, so that ain't happening. Do you think Mike Fiers will be shunned by players like Canseco was for snitching? Yes, I do.
Yep, I do.
In fact, this interview that we had, that we'll have some audio here in a minute from it, but this guy was talking about that, and he I got to get his damn name. I lost his name. But he's a catcher in baseball, and Tucker Barnhart, and he was talking to, thank you, Nick, and he was talking about the fact that he doesn't think Mike Fiers meant for this to happen. Like, because he says, I think a lot of people in baseball knew this has been going on, and none of us really cared that much. Like, we know it, but he says he doesn't think Mike Fiers' intention was to end up costing people their jobs. He was just talking about it, kind of matter-of-factly, and now it blew up into this. And what's interesting from that interview, it was on the Pat McAfee show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a catcher, he's in baseball, but he brings up a really good point about cheating with video and the rule book. And listen to what he had to say about that.
I kind of don't understand it. And my worry is baseball has all these unwritten rules. You hear guys say, well, he's not supposed to do that. Well, it's not by the letter of the law. It's not a rule necessarily. And so, like, in preparation for this article or for this interview, I did a little research and I read a couple articles, and nowhere that I found was anything that was being done at that time. It wasn't necessarily against any rules. Was it frowned upon? Maybe. And if it's pretty black and white for me, if they were breaking a rule, I get it. If they were breaking an unwritten rule, I don't understand it, because I mean, in any walk of life, you look for an advantage. I have a unique position because I'm in a situation as being a catcher that I do things to combat sign stealing, but also from a hitter's perspective, I would love to know what's coming.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way until I heard him say this. So shout out to Roe Pimpin for actually just having that on his Twitter where I saw it. I never thought about that, but that didn't exist in the rule book at the time that the Astros did it in 2017. And that's basically what Tucker Barnhart is saying. If you read the Major League Baseball rule book, nowhere in there did it say you can't use a video camera to record signs and then relay that information to a hitter at the plate. So really, the Astros have been penalized and have been admonished and lost draft picks and money and their manager and their GM over an unwritten rule, over a memo that went out, but this was not a violation of Major League Baseball's rules as it pertains to the rule book. That's pretty fascinating. And I'm
really
surprised
is.
That's not a bigger deal.
Well, and that's why I said, even when I was reading the report from the commissioner before he laid down the punishment against the Astros, he started talking about the use of technology. He started talking about once the Red Sox were caught with the watches and then subsequently the Yankees were caught, that he started to crack down on the use of any technology in the dugout. And then it became where he was getting more and more strict. And he also was making very clear that with each swift judgment on incidents, that it was a message to the rest of the teams that if you do it past this point, you're going to be reprimanded even harsher.
Mm-hmm.
So then he said that there were emails and other things sent out to all general managers, to all managers, that basically said, look, once we're done with this one, the message is clearly sent. Don't do it anymore or else it's really going to get ugly. And then the one that you're talking about, is it written or unwritten that in this document he starts talking about after batting practice, the use of any technology from watches to iPads to all different aspects of computerized and video technology were not to be used anymore. And I'm going, this is kind of like the unwritten rule that no one listens to, like the dress code in the NBA on the bench.
Right.
Because we saw Aaron Judge in the playoffs with an iPad.
He freaked out when he saw the camera was on him looking
we
at him.
We see when there's a pitching change, everybody bringing out their tablets going, here, let's look at him. What does he got? What's he doing? The hitting coach talking to people. So it's not like they listen to it.
That's the thing. But I found it to be absolutely fascinating that we're not talking about it from a standpoint of this is not a violation of Major League Baseball rules. This is basically what it amounts to is, it sounds like, and his point was, this was a violation of a memo. This was a violation of a suggestion not to do it. No rules were broken.
It's crazy that they wouldn't update the rules when they sent out that memo. Crazy
agree.
To me.
Agree.
Crazy.
How do you not just go ahead and say, well, I think the problem is you've got to go through the rules committee and it's got to, you know,
it's probably a process, it's got to be voted, or a protocol or something.
Right. But okay, but then you just do it next year. I mean, you just follow your own procedures to make this a rule. And when we were talking about this pre-show, Hoffman, mm-hmm. he had the point. He goes, well, but you violate the integrity of the game. Ah, okay, great point. But so is standing on second base, stealing signs and relaying it to a hitter. That is technically violating the integrity of the game, but no one gets busted for that. And that's not an issue. It's not because there's no rule that says you can't stand on second base and steal signs. So I found it fascinating that this has never come up. That wait a minute, we didn't break a rule per se, a written rule in Major League Baseball rule book. But
well, and I understand, like we talked about with in all the scandals and all the different major sports, that what you're really trying to do more so than anything else too is make sure that this is the end of it. Like you put a harsh stop to it, you make really, really harsh penalties as part of it,
sure.
And then you hope that people believe that there's still integrity in the game and that you've eliminated this going forward. But until they figure out a different way to work with their signals and to do the things that to combat what's been going on, it's not going to stop. I mean, whether you use technology or not, guys are still looking for the indicator. Guys are trying to figure out the sequences.
And he talked about that in that interview. He goes, bro, I'm a hitter. My job is to hit the, yes, I'm a catcher. But we put things in place, like when we drop the one, that's not fastball. That's telling you what sequence we're going to go through, and then we go through the sequence. And he goes, it's our job to combat this. We know people are looking. He said, and people have always been looking in baseball. But he said, so on the one hand, I kind of get that. But on the other hand, I'm a hitter. And if you can tell me what's coming, I want that advantage. It's my job. It's my job to hit the baseball.
Yeah. And here's the thing, too. Remember why? And again, it's almost like baseball – cut off their nose despite their face, all in one false swoop. Because remember now, in the playoffs, the one way everybody was combating it was mound visits. So what did they do? They started limiting mound visits.
Yeah.
So now you're asking people to steal signs again. Mm-hmm. So you're doing it to yourself.
Yeah.
Because the other thing you need to keep in mind is why do you think football, with the Patriots scandal and the Patriots stealing signals and hand signs and everything else, why do you think that the microphones and the earpieces were put in the helmets of the linebacker on defense and the quarterback on offense?
Because people sit there and watch and record.
Now you eliminate teams' ability to steal your signs.
Yep.
So whether you do it on a shin guard or a wristband, it's going to be hard because hitters are going to look down and see if they can figure out which buttons you're pushing from the catchers. But there's got to be a way technology-wise to start kiboshing all of the stealing.
I think, like you said, you put in the earpieces, you go to, you could do, I mean, I don't know. I think earpieces is probably the best way. It cuts off once the pitcher goes into the windup. But there are other things. Or you just, you know what? Just come up with a different method of relaying you're just going to memorize the pitch sequence. Or you're just going to say, okay, you know what? Let the pitcher
give
a signal.
And it can still be decoded, but instead of going with signals between the legs with your fingers, touching a certain piece of equipment or...
How about you have a signal from the catcher and you have two people in the dugout? Now you got to figure out which of the three is giving the right signal. And before you go out, you go, okay, it's going to be the bench coach that's giving the signal.
What's going to be the problem?
What?
Damn game's too long. You did too many signals.
That's true. Hey, guys, if you want to make the NFL playoffs really interesting, especially now that your Texans have been eliminated,
Go to mybookie.ag and place your bets. MyBookie is one of the most trusted places in the industry to get action on games. You can bet on more than MyBookie, or bet on more than football at MyBookie, by the way. They've got NBA. They've got Premier League. They've got college hoops. They even have the UFC, big card coming up. They also have in-game live betting, so at halftime, you missed your chance. You can still get action on the game and win some more money. Maybe you did get your bet in on time, but you want to double up? You can do that at halftime with MyBookie. You can also bet parlays and teasers. And look, they've got the fastest payouts in the business. Nobody pays you faster. They've got great promotions, 24/7 customer service, all of it and more at MyBookie.ag. Highly recommend. If you don't already have a place to bet, you go with MyBookie. And if you are somewhere else, you know what I'm talking about when I tell you how hard it is to get your money. Get that money out. I know it's going to be a struggle for you. And then get it over to MyBookie. They are the best in the business. They have more lines and better odds for the players than any other sports book around. And look, if you join right now, they're going to match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. So cool. All you got to do is put in promo code radio to activate the offer. That's promo code radio. You get that extra cash from mybookie.ag. Go do yourself a favor right now. Sign up because you bet, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. Demonstration to get my fair share of abuse.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Rolling through hour number one, three-hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Believe it or not, a lot to get to today. We did touch on the next steps in what's going to be an ongoing procedure with this whole cheating scandal with Major League Baseball is Alex Cora mutually parts ways with the Red Sox. It continues for all of you butthurt people on text and Twitter who were like, another day, move on, turn the page. Story's not going away.
It's a huge story.
So neither are
turn
we.
Turn the page.
So we're talking about it. But lots of other things to get to that kind of, man, happened overnight into today.
Yeah.
Luke Kuechly and the Carolina Panthers. I mean, this guy, what is he, all-pro 6 of his 7 years in the league. The most tackles in the NFL since he entered in 2012. He's 28 years old, and he puts out a video last night that says, I know it's time, I'm retiring.
It's crazy.
Shocking.
Very shocking.
And so the first thing I did was I looked up his career earnings, which is in the $60+ million.
Yeah.
That's good.
So he's good. Yep.
You don't really know about him doing anything illegal. He's never been, you know, associated with drugs, gambling.
I think for everything that I know or heard, he's a pretty squeaky clean dude.
Yeah. I can tell you what it is, boys. It's concussions.
Yeah. That's what I thought, too.
Yeah. He's had 7, physical, I believe, yeah, in the last couple of years. And I think that when you watch the video, and obviously he was very emotional and got very choked up, as he should be, but there's only one reason why, a few small reasons why you're going to walk away from 10 mil plus this year, all the money, all the accolades, the respect, all the tweets you saw from all the players saying you just did everything the right way. But you got to believe some doctor said the next one you get, whether you talk CT or otherwise, is going to do some irreparable damage that's going to set you back for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it's basically where you got to have that moment of either I stop now or it's going to stop me in life.
And I was talking to Tyler about it. And I was like, you know, it's funny because you, at some point, you have to start to consider those decisions. Look at Earl Campbell, mm-hmm, for example. I mean, he is physically just broken.
Yeah, he's just, yep, not in good shape.
And you know, I bet he wishes, well, was it worth it to stay and play as long as you did and not walk away? And now the money is different when Earl was playing till now.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, like you said, $10 million is $10 million.
Right.
Do you risk, well, maybe I don't get another concussion, or maybe it's not the tipping point, but it's sad because he was like, I don't want to do this, but I know I have to.
And you bring up an interesting point. What was the lack of advancement in medical technology that caused the significant damage on the body like Earl Campbell and so many numerous other, sure, ex-players, where it has matured now to, what's going on between the ears, the CTE, the damage that's going to be done, that's going to lead to Parkinson's. It's going to lead to dementia. It's going to lead to so many things that you make all this money, you get all this fame and fortune, and then you can't enjoy it because when you're done playing, and it goes back to the Marshawn Lynch press conference the other night too, trying to get dudes to understand in real raw terminology that if you ain't taking care of everything from your brain to your finances to your body, whatever you think you're going to have for the rest of your life to be living high, it's all going to be gone because of one little misstep in one of those categories. And this is where it's come to, where if you don't realize and don't take seriously seven concussions in a small window of time and what that damage is going to do to you long term and short term, and you continue to bang your head against a wall every day,
playing with fire.
Yeah, you're messing with your whole livelihood.
I think the advantage that this new era of players have is that they can look back at guys like Earl Campbell and say, man, I want a decent quality of life. Earl Campbell didn't have that advantage, you know? So not only did he was not able to see all these older players that had all kinds of CTE, he didn't have the money as well. It's one thing to live with, like, body pain, and that obviously affects your quality of life. But just like Joel said, whatever happens between your ears, Parkinson's, stuff like that, you're talking about losing your independence. You're talking about a real poor quality of life. And so at least at the very minimum, guys like Luke Kuechly and these new era of linebackers and whoever plays a position in football that requires a lot of body hits and body damage, at least they can look at older guys like Earl Campbell and say, you know what, it's best for me to stop after 6 or 7 years.
It's fascinating, you know, to see how this shift, because it used to be like, oh, I'm playing as long as I can play, and now with CTE and all the other physical ailments that people are suffering, you're starting to see people retire sooner. And this article on ESPN was talking about that and listed some of the ages. You got, you know, Kuechly obviously retiring at 28. Gronk retired at 29. Andrew Luck retired at 29. You had Baldwin, Cam Chancellor, Calvin Johnson, all retired at the age of 30. I mean, that's young for football players to be retiring at. Most guys play into their mid to late 30s if they're able to, if they're good enough. And but then you know, Chris Borland.
Chris Borland is 24. Who I was going to go to because you know I know him well because he played at Wisconsin. Dude was a second-round pick of the Niners. Came in his first year and took the league by storm, led the team in tackle, did all these different things. And after that year went, you know what? I went to school for a degree. I've got a degree in some kind of science where, for all the reasons stated in above and others, I'm out.
Yeah, 24 years old. Jake Locker was 26 when he retired. But they have that whole list, and pretty fascinating. I mean, that's a lot of good names. And Doug Baldwin, Cam Chancellor, Calvin Johnson, all 30
Calvin
or under.
Johnson's the biggest.
Yeah, all
Megatron
30 or,
just well, walks away.
Gronk and Luck also.
Well, Gronk too. But I think
but both of those guys were 29.
Yeah, Gronk was more
physically though. He was breaking down.
Yeah, that's true.
He was breaking down mentally too. You see him cry all the time, and
he
I know
broke down mentally at birth.
Yeah, I know. You always tell me that he's kind of an emotional dude, but I don't think getting hit in the head or body hits help that situation. You know,
no way.
It doesn't help that situation at all. I'm just, and this is all happening. These younger players are retiring early, and there's the helmet to helmet rule is gone. Like, I mean, is in play. Like, you can't hit somebody in the head, and people are still retiring after 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. So, kudos to him for being strong enough to walk away and avoiding whatever peer pressure and otherwise all the different lures that were there for him to keep playing. But right off the top, from Matt Rhule's perspective, I'm sure he looked at it and went, God, I had an anchor in the middle of my defense that's gone. But it's one of the things that he does add to his staff for next year that's coming out was the guy that supposedly wasn't going anywhere at LSU, but he got Joe Brady away and his passing game coordinator at LSU to be his offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. That's a good get.
That is.
That's a guy that was a former assistant coach in the NFL, but he went from unpaid assistant in the NFL 5 years ago to a assistant with the Saints to passing game coordinator for LSU. They win the national championship, and 2 days after the national championship, you're going to be introduced as the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers.
You think he turns Cam into a prolific passer?
See, I don't know if Cam's even going to be there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right now, they're proceeding as if Cam is the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. But you think he? I mean.
I got a better question for you. Mm-hmm. You think at number 7 they trade up to try and get to number 1 so that they could reunite Joe Burrow with Joe Brady?
It's very possible.
There's another scenario, because what they'd like to do is send Cam on his way and save $19 million.
Yeah. What is the – who's got the first pick? Is it the Bengals?
The Bengals. And everybody's like, boy, if you're Joe Burrow, the great escape would be how do you get out of that?
If you're the Bengals, would you take Cam Newton in the seventh pick for the first pick?
See, you know, they've got a reputation for doing things differently, but being super cheap. If Cam's contract wasn't that big and you were bringing him that marquee name.
Because you're like, no, we need a quarterback, right? I'm not just going to swap the picks. But, you know, maybe send Cam and your seventh pick and a third round pick or fifth round pick.
That'd
be a haul.
Matt Rhule and their front office is probably at least sitting down having a discussion going, how do we get Burrow linked up with our dude?
Yeah.
So totally there's a little NFL there. Luke Kuechly out. Joe Brady in as offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers as the offseason continues to roll for most teams in the NFL. But we still have four teams that are playing, and we'll be talking about that throughout the week as well. But hour number one in the books, 2 hours still to go. Second hour right around the corner. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.